Today is the Day of Atonement.
Kapara.
And just want to mention that I've been given rather strict instructions not to look at all the beautiful people in the front row. And the reason for this is that when I do, they can't hear me at the back, so it's going to be a little exercise in the middle way in staying concentrated. There are no guarantees. So, I think in the 20 years of... already. Back to the meditation cushion. In the 20 years of coming here to beloved Israel, I think it's the first time that I've actually been here in September for Yom Kippur. And of course, in the years of visits and coming here, I've heard and listened very much about this particular day. And a day, of course, which is unusually free from lot of the usual noises of cars on the streets and aeroplanes and television and radio stations. And it's quite exceptional and unusual in this slightly mad world that the vast majority of people in a single country support this and make it a day which does provide, for some people, some real opportunity for some reflection. And I hear too, in the absence of cars, the kids can reclaim the streets, and all credit to them for that as well. And of course, for some people who both are religious and some people wish to follow in the spirit of all of this, including some of you here at this time and over the next 25 hours, I think, will give support to it, and some through the fast that takes place. And all of this can give some real genuine reminders to us of our inner life and of this relationship to past to present and from present to future. Yesterday evening, when we began, I spoke briefly about the importance of this reflection on the past. I would like, if I may, to touch with you on this a little bit more, and some of the ways that we can usefully apply attention and exploration and some inner inquiry. And so in this journey of life, as we go through it, there are circumstances in life which impact upon us. And it's not unusual in the impact, in this case of painful situations, that our inner life wishes to find blame and fault. And the finding of blame and fault can go pretty well only in four directions. And I don't think there's a fifth. If you hear one, let me know. The first one, where we're finding blame and fault, that would be with ourselves. So we turn our attention to a painful event in the past and we say, well, it was all my fault. It was my choice, or it was my impulse, or it was my decision. And I really do have to reflect on this and see, well, what was actually going on with me that I behaved like this, that I did this, and it caused a lot of stress and pain and anguish to another or others, known or unknown to us. And sometimes human beings take too much burden of responsibility. That then becomes a weight. The weight, as I said yesterday, generates a sense of guilt, which is even more weight upon us. And it's very hard to free ourselves up from the burden of self-blame, self-attack, the lack of self-worth, the consistency of putting ourselves down over a major or a series of minor events accumulated in time from the past. And one has to remember, teachings and Dharma teachings are a teaching of liberation, and in the language of the East and the Buddha, the teaching of liberation is the ending of old karma, which is having a painful, unsatisfactory influence upon the present. It's a little bit like sometimes in life we are carrying around with us a kind of weight, a sack of potatoes, kilos on our back, and that weight bears down upon us. And human beings are vulnerable to carrying weights from the past. Not only, of course, their own past, but generational past, which has passed through through the DNA, through hereditary factors, through the family dynamics, and we find ourselves carrying that weight. Dharma as a teaching of liberation is a teaching of letting go, of freeing ourselves from the burdens and weights of the past. In the inner life as well, the second area where blame, fault-finding, negativity, reaction against, of course, is the other. So, sometimes we can say with quite justification, the other is responsible. There are parents who violently neglect or abuse their children by voice, by physical violence, by attitudes of mind, by constantly putting them down. And we can't say, well, that's the child's responsibility. We can't lay the fault at the child there. But very easily, the child, both in childhood, but particularly, of course, in adult, the painful memory of that may still be influencing, and the influence of it in its unhealthy form will be a consistent finding of blame, negativity, criticism, and voicing of reaction against the parents. That keeps one trapped, it keeps one stuck. And if we have a tendency within ourselves, or in our communication with others, to regard how we are, that all the responsibility for how we are rests with the behavior of our parents, we'll never be free. We'll never be free. The third, and equally important, is both. So sometimes we look at situations, you've been in a relationship, the person's loved you, you've loved the person, or whatever it may be. And it's not that one saying it's all your fault, it's all my fault. The two agree. The two say, well, both of us made a mess of this. Neither of us really could work this out together. We can't live together anymore. And there's a split up from those circumstances. In the dynamic of the two, when there is separation, and some of you, I know, having spoken with today, and some of you are going through these transitions at this very time in your life, that in these kind of transitions of relationship, of the separation between two people, or the breakup of the family, it's vitally important in such a dynamic that the attention to that is that it leaves in Pali, it's called nimitta. It leaves a mark, it leaves a stain, it leaves, as Afa said, a mental image which just kind of stays. And that mental image of the memory, and how very easily that mental image starts to find fault. Either it was all my fault, it was all his fault, it was all our fault, and that starts to get carried. Speak this from a little experience with regard to this. With my, I mentioned yesterday, my hero, my darling daughter, that when the her mum and I separated, and she was a child at that time. We made one small agreement, and you know, 1,001 times I said, thank God, no, not that I believe in God, but thank God we made this agreement. And the agreement that we made was, we would never, ever speak unkindly in front of our child about the other parent. Not one word. So there might be friends in the house, you know, we might be talking about things. And if our daughter, Nishona, was in the room at the time, we would never say an unkind word about the other parent. And to the credit of, you know, both parents here, we kept to that. And it's that kind of respect and sensitivity, in this case, there, so it saves that mental image, that dark mental image. Sometimes long after the event, which still can be carried, and still finding fault with both. And of course, it doesn't create the good circumstances for a fresh relationship. It's extremely difficult for a man or a woman to come in freely and spaciously into a new relationship if we are carrying stuff from the past, you know, and frankly, from experience with this, that sometimes the beloved one has still some history from the past there. That's not resolved. Buddhist language, the old karma, and of course it's intruding into the present. The fourth, so one is, it's all my fault, and all to self-blame. Two, it's all his, her, their fault. Their can be personal, family, or a loved one. Their fault can be social, this group of people and all the stereotyping. Their fault can be political, that organization, that nation, that group of people. All of these have to be addressed extremely deeply if we're going to see in fresh ways. It's not just a personal, it's personal, social, and political. The fourth one, and it's used quite a lot there, it's not me, her, him, or them, or both. It's some metaphysical idea. And human beings, when they can't get an answer to what the hell's going wrong, they'll find something. And they will, and of course, one of the popular ones is dear old G-O-D, etc. It's God's punishment. Another one would be, well, it's just fate. It's just the spiritual one. Oh, it's just how it happened. Another one would be, well, it's destiny. It was doomed. Not popular. It was doomed to end up like this, etc. So there's the inability to look at the dynamic. So we find a word or some cliches outside of it. You see, these things happen. That's another popular Buddhist one-liner. Come on, please wake up. So either self, other, both or neither, something, you know, in the larger scheme of things. It's a way, odd sort of way, but it's a way of trying to find some comfort or support or justification for blame, fault-finding, negativity, reactivity, aggression, violence, and the justifications that go with it. Do we have to live like this? Is our species so poor that we have to live like this? Can't we make this wonderful and special day of atonement another way of feeling and looking, so that we're not trapped helplessly in one of these four viewpoints and all the horror, the terror, and the torment that goes with any of these four viewpoints? There has to be another way of human beings relating and being with each other. I know some of you are fasting from the water. Forgive me. So sometimes we look at our past, as I just mentioned, and it might be, rather inviting cheap, they don't work so well. It might be that even just here today, that just in our meditations today, some area, something has arisen within. And we don't want to be stuck, as I mentioned, in the fault finding, either with ourselves or with the other. The language is not very, very little used in the tradition, and I think there's some in the Dharma tradition. The language of forgiveness is often used. Actually, I prefer the word, I've never heard it in more than 60 years of living in England. I've never heard the word atonement. It's so associated with something religion, and the only thing which we have close to a religion in England is the National Health Service. So sometimes in the anguish or the pain or the difficulty which is arising within, and just today we might be looking to the past and say, God, that's so difficult, so painful, I'm still working with it. It could be from childhood. It could be a recent crisis in your life, it could be a breakup, it could be a loss of a job, all the things that can sometimes traumatize the life. And in the looking and the turning the attention to the past, we may feel we have to take some responsibility, and I think that's genuine sense of a certain kind of maturity. Yes, I was involved in this, or whatever it may be about. But the important thing is, in giving care and attention to that, especially if we looked at it and we said, I really said some really nasty things to another, or someone has said something really horrible or nasty to me, I should be able to forgive. Yeah. And sometimes, of course, in very intense and difficult situations, and we're feeling a lot of criticism, fault-finding and blame, it's an enormous shift and change in the heart to go from blame and reaction to forgiveness. To me, in the emotional life, wow, there are some people who can do that, but there ain't that many, I can tell you. So if a person's really suffered under the weight of either what I did or what he or she or they did to me, and all the anger and the hurt and the disappointment that goes with it, to turn the heart totally around and say, you know something, I forgive you. That is rare. That is rare. You know, I was reminded, as I was talking to this rather popular rabbi from Nazareth. I can't remember his name, but Christians like him. And so there he is, the Romans have nailed him on the cross. I mean, it's a famous story, 2,000 years old. And then amongst it, the last words that he said was, when the Romans nailed him up, it's a pretty horrendous death. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You may have heard this sometime. Yeah. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Or to put it in another way, damn it, I'm not forgiving them, but you can forgive them. And I think most of us would take that kind of viewpoint. I would anyway. So I think sometimes it's a bit much for ourselves to take on board the that we should be able to forgive. I'm not quite so sure, some of us, in certain situations, whether that is possible. And the Buddha, to his credit, in fact, and to his wisdom here, really acknowledges the human difficulty to shift from abuse and violence and hurt and blame to forgiveness. It's such a 180-degree turnaround. And he's offered, and I think it's wise and it's skillful, he really has offered a middle way. And that middle way, he calls it divine, and he uses the language of equanimity, of being steady and even-mindedness, which itself is a great practice and a great undertaking. So sometimes, as I said here, we look at the past, we might fall into the grip of pointing the finger, me, other, both, God, or something. And we see that the view is still being supported with the blame, the disappointment, the hurt, the wounds, the anger, the violence, or whatever it may be. Rather than say to ourselves, I really need to change so that I can forgive, can it be possible for us to let go of that wish? It's a sweet wish, but to let go of that and say, well, look, can I learn to be steady and clear in my being with what has happened in the past? So I'm recognizing the events, I'm not running away from it, I really am acknowledging the old, best as my memory tells me, this is what happened. I have no wish to exaggerate or distort. I feel hurt, I feel abused, I feel wounded, I feel completely let down, I feel betrayed, whatever the description may be, or I did this to somebody else there. Can I just learn to keep very steady and very clear, with a clear acknowledgement, so that in the quiet acknowledgement and the recognition of this, to find a place inside of myself which I'm not putting demands to be loving and forgiving, but I am just being with and trusting there's something valuable and significant about being in a non-reactive place. Yeah. Because whatever happened to us in the past, recent or a long time ago, it's the view of, this is an important bit, the view of the past in the Dharma is more significant than the past. Because I can't do anything about it. The past is the past. But what I have now in my human resources, in my inner life, is I have a view of it. My memory may be exactly, there's no denying the fact, this happened, it was like this, that's the fact. But the view of that fact takes more on more significance than the fact. Because one view can feed my pain, my anger, my hurt, and my disappointment. And another view can be with the fact, but in a non-reactive way. I've got to find that view. If I find that view and I'm clear about it, I can refer to the past. I can reflect on the past. I can get some insight, understanding on the past, because I know my view, my way of looking at it, is different from what it was. That takes some reflection. It may take a human being asking herself or himself, what is the way to look at a painful past in a fresh way? And sometimes you and I have the privilege of meeting people, and it is a privilege on retreats and elsewhere, and some people have been through horrendous situations there. Situations of losing their children in a in a road accident, losing the children in drugs, losing the children in war, loved friends disappearing from one's life, all these events that can go on in our life, and a lot of pain there. Can in all of these events we find ways to look at it, to be at peace with it there? And that takes, you know, some sensitivity from us, some real reflection. It may happen, and I've experienced this, and perhaps some of you do as well. Somebody comes to us, and she or he acknowledges that they have brought some pain and hurt to our life. And the person, and sometimes people are carrying it around, even when you and I have moved on from it. And so the person comes to us and says, you know, last week, or last month, or last year, or 10 years ago, I said this, did this, or didn't do this, whatever it might be about. And the person asks us for forgiveness. And this request, this invitation for forgiveness, we honestly need to hear this. It may have long gone from us. It doesn't matter to us anymore. We've long since moved on. And it would be a mistake to say, oh, it doesn't matter, it didn't mean anything, it wasn't important. That's not a very skillful response. To actually listen to a person who is acknowledging a transgression, means a mistake, an error of judgment, some difficult, problematic behavior. There is a confession there. There is a request for forgiveness there. Let's hear it. Let's really express our appreciation and gratitude. It doesn't matter if it's not a problem for us. It's our willingness to listen to the other, what she says, what he says, and connecting with that, and understand sometimes in our life we really need the forgiveness of the other. And therefore it might be in your time here, in my time here, and particularly on this day, that we look honestly at ourselves, and there may be a person or more in your life who you know some way or other you have hurt, and you've been aggressive towards, or problematic, or you've betrayed their trust, or whatever it might be. It is always, without exception, worthwhile to reflect on that, and to see, best of all, face to face, whether in the face to face you can communicate with that person and say, hey, I'm sorry. Hey, I blew it. Hey, dumped a lot on you, I'm asking your forgiveness. To me, that's a real sign of real emotional maturity. We need that. It's so easy, isn't it, to ask God for forgiveness. But actually going to the God in the human being, going to somebody directly and asking, whoa, that's another ballgame. And it's that kind of direct connection and communications with the other. And sometimes that which has been painful gets healed. A friend of mine was on a retreat with me, very beloved friend. She and her brother, in their 20s, had a terrible argument. One of the parents had died, not an unusual story, and in the will that was left, there was a huge argument about the will and how it should be distributed. So there's all the tears of loss of the parent, last parent, loss of the parent, etc., and the family get together, etc. And then this argument, after the will was read, next few days, there. They did not talk to each other, this is brother and sister, for 30 years. They were so angry with each other about who, where the distribution of the will. How money is such a, not money, but the attachment to money, it's, of course, can cause such divisions in the family. And on the retreat, this 30-year gap really began to trouble her. And this, she said, like, it's my brother. And how is it that we just refuse to have any contact? So she made, after the retreat, quiet, tentative proposals for some renewal. He was still mad at her. He didn't want to know. He was married, had a couple of kids. So time to time, she'd send her a present, send a small gift, send him a short note of full acknowledgement for her responsibilities. There was no blame towards him whatsoever. And she told me it took a year or two. No replies, no responses, etc. And after a year or two, he sent a warm note of appreciation. And that moment opened the door. They're the best of friends now. They're making up for 30 years of lost time. She's a single woman in her 50s. She said, Christopher, I've got a family. I've got a nephew. I've got a niece. I've got a brother. I've got a sister-in-law. She said, it's just made such a difference to my life. And it's that is what atonement is about. It's that when a human being says, let me at least from my side see what I can do and offer to find some reconciliation. And the Buddha's words on this is, he says, this is liberation through love. They're the words. Liberation from the weight of the past. Liberation from the hurt of the past. The conflict of the past. It's a liberation through metta. The liberation through kindness. The liberation through love. Sometimes in the past, the regret, I'll give you a small incident in a moment, the regrets which come, so there's the process of our life, and we look back to the past, and I often hear this from the yogis, the meditating wallahs, and sometimes the language of the missed opportunity. And in this kind of dance of life, in this dance of life that takes place there, sometimes there is a moment or moment and it just suddenly appears and it requires from us a capacity to kind of capture the moment, to respond to the moment, whatever it might be. And sometimes we see, I'll give you a clear example of this. You see, the moment was there, it was very short-lived in the scheme of things, and one missed the moment for it. There was an opportunity, and one missed it. And sometimes, I know for myself, and perhaps for yourselves as well, we are reflecting a little bit on the past, and in that, some feeling arises, and one of the feelings which can arise for us is some feeling of regret. You know, I missed it. I could have done this. I should have done that. I just missed it. And the regret would be a natural response to an opportunity that passed us by or we didn't take up. And I think that feeling of regret. And it's an important human feeling there. And it's not that we did anything harmful or bad or anything wrong, but there's the feeling of regret. The wisdom of the Dharma, that image, that mental image of regret, how very easy, this we have to be watchful for, very easy, we grab hold of the image of regret. a regret, whatever it might be. And if we grab it, we will start beating ourselves up over it. The regret is healthy. You notice something, you didn't follow up, and there's some regret. But when we grab it, the self is the grabber. That's what the self does. It doesn't know anything else, it's always the grabber. So the grabber, called the self, grabs hold of this, and then takes that moment of regret and uses it against ourselves with "if I should have, if only," whatever it might be. And the small little incident that comes to mind, and others may also know this, having been around this earth for a little while with a few experiences. So sometime in the 1980s in India, that's the past of the 1980s, I had the wonderful privilege of, if I may say, meeting this breathtakingly beautiful woman, Eileen. You know, one of those where the eyeballs go out a centimetre, you know what I mean? Where the person is talking but you can't hear because the eyes are going, whoa. So it was one of those moments there. And the good lady and I became extremely good, really, really great mates, really good friends, through the 80s, through the 90s. Now we keep in touch and in contact with each other. Around 20 years ago, in a moment, in a sentence, I can remember the very spot, you know, these things, the unforgettable moments, very spot. She said to me, "Christopher, would you like me to come and live with you?" And me, stupid, foolish, ignorant, off my trolley, didn't respond. And I just thought she was just saying it playfully, or with no weight behind it, or whatever. So the moment came, and she thought, "Oh, clearly he's not interested," or whatever. So she didn't bring it up again until last New Year's Eve. And so we were walking in South Durban, and she's in her 50s now, and I'm somewhere else. And so it's New Year's Eve, and we're walking on, I live in Devon, and we're walking along the cliff tops there. The moon is out, it's terribly romantic. The moon is out, we're looking out to sea, the moon is on the sea, it's 10 minutes to midnight, you know, etc. And she said to me, "Christopher, do you remember that?" And she said, "I don't suppose you will remember. But do you remember in 1992 when I said to you, 'Christopher, would you like me to come and live with you?'" And I said, "Of course I remember it. I'll never forget it. We were in the kitchen at the time. It was in the morning." And she said, "I meant it." I went, "Oh no!" "Oh no!" Then I said, "Shoot me!" So, and I told my friends about it, who know her, and my daughter knows her, and also have the same great love and appreciation. And they said, "Yeah, you better shoot yourself." So, sometimes, there is the moment. There's the moment which has the, God, the regret. I missed it, I blew it, I lost the opportunity, or whatever. And somehow, find this one. Humour inside of oneself with these things, but as I mentioned earlier, not to grab hold of it, and because if we do, and we start, as I said, beating ourselves up over, we can't get on with our life. We're not free any longer. We're living in nostalgia. We're living in the world of what should be or what might have been, and human beings can't live like that. We can't be a whole human being if we're living in the disappointments with the past, you know, and disappointment. So she spoke to me, she asked me a question, I was stupid, I said nothing. As a result, it was a disappointment. I might have had a long appointment with her. Get the point. Anyway. Similarly, sometimes the resolution, the lowering of the weight of the past for reconciliation, for atonement, for steadiness and equanimity, for forgiveness, these are profound explorations for all of us. They really matter in the human context. But part of the function of that, and it's important to remember with the function, because it's a contribution, and this is the emphasis with the Buddha's teaching, not just for itself, this feeling at peace with our past, but also, and essentially, because it frees us up. It's back to the language, it's the weight of unloading the past karma. It's being at peace with what is. And that peace with what is and what was enables a human being to find fresh explorations and fresh insights. And so, do, in the time that you're here, and Sandy in the evening program will be speaking with you, guided meditations as well, about the significance of atonement and forgiveness and reconciliation, that it may be that something is arising here. But if it isn't, there is no need to start putting pressure upon yourself. It's not that everybody, including in the hall here, is carrying around unresolved problems from the past there. And sometimes, with knowledge and good counsel, with good therapy, with good meditation, good friends, good family and so forth, some people beautifully, genuinely feel really up to date with themselves. We had a look at the length of the past, looked at the various issues and incidents of the past, and there are people in the hall who can genuinely say, actually, I feel comfortable with myself, I feel comfortable with my past. Nothing is coming to mind in my meditation which is kind of heavy and unresolved. I'm not attacking and putting myself down or others or both or some metaphysical idea or whatever. And that sense of being at peace with one's history is really a precious and beautiful quality, and from that beautiful quality much else can come. And there are others will know, either because sometimes it comes to you. This requires attention. And when something keeps arising, and it keeps entering into the field of consciousness, it's the way of the inner life saying, look, this is unresolved. This needs attention. And sometimes it doesn't come in the day, but it comes in the night. It comes in the dream. And the dream, and the Buddha has referred to the importance of dreams, he's spoken about his own dreams, he's spoken about the meaning of dreams. Carl Jung would have been thrilled to bits. And the dream world, too. Because in the dream world, in the night, there is what's called the witness, the ego witness. The ego witness says, oh, I had this dream. This happened to me. That's the ego witness, the self witnessing the dream. But of course, the dream consists of what's in the dream is you. Every person, every situation, even the objects, are telling us something, are revealing something. And sometimes we just want to catch as well what the feeling is in the dream. Is it happiness in the dream? Is it fear in the dream? Is it negativity in the dream? Is it stress in the dream? Is it confusion in the dream? And so sometimes in the daytime, with the story that arises, or in the nighttime with the dream, something in that event that's taking place, we need to just to tune into, connect into. So sometimes the dream wants to communicate something strongly to us, so it exaggerates. So sometimes a person is shocked and they wake up and had a dream which either some violence was inflicted on them, or they inflicted violence, as an example there. It doesn't mean to say that one is a violent human being or the other is, but it's sometimes it's the metaphor that there is something unresolved in a negative or angry way. We want to be able to look at our inner life to see ways and means to find to reflect to the past. If there are any situations which really require our attention, to really give that some attention and come back to the earlier point. If the view is problematic, then the invitation to the inner life is, what is another way to look at this? If the view about it is problematic, what is another way to look at this? And the quality of our mindfulness and our meditations and the communications sharing with the other may bring out another way to look. And you'll know when you found a fresh way to look, because when you have, the problem goes down. The conflict gets less. There is a genuine feeling of atonement. There is a genuine feeling of resolution is being made. It's that feeling change which tells you this new way or new ways of looking is the way that works for me. That takes a lot of burden and stress off our life. It opens up our heart to much greater love and kindness. And we have the capacity that sometimes, when necessary, to find ways to ask for forgiveness, to share what happened with us. We also have the capacity to listen to others and what she or he may need to say to us, and we listen very carefully and very respectfully to their words. And that whole dynamic genuinely pays great respect to our humanity. Very precious. And today being the Day of Atonement, I think is an extremely important day, because it's such a reminder of the importance of loving and clear communication with ourselves and with others. Thank you. Let's have a quiet minute, shall we? May all beings be at peace with the past. May all beings be at peace with the present. May all beings be at peace with each other. Thank you.